For the Medical Journal of Australia, I'm Kate Swanell. Welcome to the MJA podcast.
The status quo, which is essentially the proportion diagnosed in Australia of people living with Hep B drifting up by maybe 1% a year and leaving 70,000 people undiagnosed, is utterly unacceptable.
That's Professor Ben Cowie, an infectious diseases physician and director of the WHO Collaborating Centre for Viral Hepatitis. Ben and his colleagues at the Doherty Institute have written an article for the MJA in which they call for universal screening of all Australian adults for hepatitis B. We invited him in as our special guest to ask him why. You and your colleagues have written a perspective talking about the need, or putting out a call anyway, for national screening for hepatitis B for all Australian adults. What's the situation currently? How many Australians do we know have hepatitis B?
So we estimate around 220,000 Australians are living with chronic hepatitis B. That's based on particularly on modelling studies that are using a range of different inputs to try and estimate the prevalence of hepatitis B in the country, and then sort of backed in from with other data, including sort of historical seroprevalence studies, et cetera. So around 1% of the population, 220,000 people.
Are we finding everybody as soon as we should?
Oh, goodness, no. Look, there's ample evidence of that fact. I guess perhaps some of the most concerning and telling evidence that we're really not diagnosing people in a timely fashion is when we look at things like the proportion of people who are diagnosed with liver cancer attributable to hepatitis B, and around a quarter of those people in the most recent data from the Kirby Institute in New South Wales, around a quarter of those people who have got liver cancer from Hep B, their Hep B is only diagnosed at the time of their liver cancer diagnosis or in the 2 years immediately prior. So this is people who have had, for most of them, have had a condition for decades that can be diagnosed with a blood test which costs the MBS about $15 or something, and with ample opportunity to intervene to prevent those outcomes. Yet a quarter of people are only being diagnosed with Hep B when it's far, far too late.
Because Hep B is generally asymptomatic, isn't it?
It is. It's asymptomatic right up until someone has, well, for the most part, up until they've got advanced liver disease or indeed liver cancer. So that's one of the criteria for a condition that is eminently suitable for a screening program, which is that you do have a long asymptomatic phase in which you can intervene to prevent outcomes.
So who gets screened at the moment?
So really our only universal screening program is antenatal women, and the universality of that is not really assured, but we think that the levels of screening antenatally are very high. Certainly one would expect 90% plus, probably 95% plus, which is why when you look at the surveillance data, you see a surge in diagnoses in women of childbearing age compared to males and compared to people of other age groups, because it's our only screening program we currently have. There's lots of other recommendations, but that's probably the closest we come to universality.
Who are the at-risk groups? I mean, I gather that it's mainly caught in childhood, very early childhood, yes?
Most people who have chronic hepatitis B, so ongoing Hep B, acquired it, yes, at birth or early in childhood. And that's because there's a very significant effect of age on progression to long-term infection. So an infant exposed at birth, if there's no vaccine or other prophylaxis administered, roughly 90% chance of going on to lifelong chronic infection, whereas an adult exposed or even someone in their teens or in adulthood, it's more like 5%, which is why the vast majority of people globally and a significant majority here in Australia living with chronic Hep B have had it since the time they were born or early childhood.
Children born overseas, are they the ones who are most at risk?
So the majority of people living with Hep B in Australia, yes, were born in countries overseas where Hep B is endemic or was endemic. I mean, the vaccine program is a great story here. It's an even better story in many countries where, you know, prior to vaccination, the prevalence of Hep B in the population was around 10%, and that's just plummeted. And probably one of the biggest success stories we have in the world is China, which has seen just such a profound reduction in the prevalence of hepatitis B following, you know, universal vaccination and scale up through the 90s and then through the 2000s. That program alone is projected to have saved over 5 million future deaths, yeah, liver cancer and cirrhosis. It's absolutely profound.
What are the criteria for having a disease be involved in a universal screening program?
Yeah, look, it's an excellent question. And there's a range of criteria. Probably the most commonly cited ones are those from the WHO, which I think back in the late 60s published a series of criteria which have been updated since, but really are the cornerstone of how we approach a screening program. And that is that the condition has to be important, both for the individual and for the community in terms of its population burden. You have to have highly accurate diagnostic tests. So, you know, you need to have a test that actually tells you if they've got people got it or not. Typically, this long asymptomatic period that we were talking about with Hep B, which lasts decades in the case of hepatitis B, that treatments are not only available, but they're more effective if they're started earlier on in the disease course, so that the actual utility of screening is such that you're actually improving outcomes by actually initiating effective treatments earlier. And the final one is a really critical one, that based on cost-effectiveness studies, the cost of diagnosis and treatment is economically balanced in relation to the resources available to the healthcare system in which you're proposing it. So you can't set up a screening program if the treatment is so expensive that it's going to not actually be able to be affordable for the society in which you're establishing it. But certainly, as far as Australia goes and as far as hepatitis B goes, we certainly argue in this perspective that all of those criteria are met for hepatitis B in Australia.
I'm chatting today with Professor Ben Cowie from the Doherty Institute. His co-authored perspective on hepatitis B screening can be found at mja.com.au, where it is permanently open access. If you're enjoying this podcast and would like to leave us some feedback, you can drop me a line at cswannell, that's cswannell at mja.com.au. We always love to hear from our listeners, particularly if you have a suggestion for someone you'd like us to interview. All our podcasts can be listened to at mja.com.au/podcasts or on Apple Podcasts and on Spotify. Back to our chat. So what are the barriers to getting a universal screening program?
I think we've been in a state of evolution in our response to diagnosis of hepatitis B. The recommendations are largely the same as they have been for, well, coming up for three decades, really, and that is risk-based screening. So thinking about country of birth, thinking about Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander status, because Indigenous Australians also have a significantly greater prevalence of hepatitis B. Thinking about people who have other risk factors for acquisition, such as people who inject drugs or people who have served custodial sentences, people who might have had blood transfusions in the distant past or have had surgery in settings where sterilisation can't be assured, people with abnormal LFTs, so liver function test abnormalities, they're on the list of criteria, or women who are pregnant, obviously, for antenatal screening, people who come not just born in overseas in high prevalence or intermediate prevalence countries, but obviously people with a background as asylum seekers or refugees. So there's a very broad list. And it's really hard, not just for GPs, but I think for any clinician to actually go and say, right, what's that full list? And do I have to honestly ask all these questions of every patient to sort out whether I should be ordering a test for a condition? So, you know, Hep B is one of the leading causes of liver cancer in Australia. And liver cancer has been, for some time, the fastest increasing cause of cancer deaths in our country. The idea that GPs are being expected to remember all of these different parameters and considerations and then asking these questions, this is not the kind of stuff that's easy to do in a routine consultation, right? And so that's really why I think we're saying this is an important condition. We're asking so much of GPs to actually diagnose, monitor and refer and manage appropriately. Let's take one of those burdens off and let's just test everybody.
And you're suggesting everybody over the age of 19?
Yeah, that's
right. Is that early enough?
Well, that's based on the fact that we've had universal vaccination here in Australia for infants since the year 2000. And really, even for people overseas, in many of the migrant source countries which a predominant proportion of the people living with Hep B in Australia come from, they've also had vaccination, maybe not as high levels in some countries, but in other countries, very high levels. I was talking about China. Many other countries in our region have had high levels of infant vaccination, at least for the last 15 years. So we estimate that the prevalence, and we see it in the data, the prevalence amongst those groups from overseas is also dropping in the vaccine eligible cohort, that would mean that the utility of screening under the age of 20 is a lot less.
What's the next step? Have you started lobbying the mm-hmm. relevant politicians?
Yeah. So I guess the next steps for us, I mean, first of all, is to start the debate. I mean, we're not assuming we're correct. We would love this to be challenged and would love for, you know, other academics, researchers, advocates, clinicians to pick holes in it. But we really do want to stimulate that argument because I think the status quo, which is essentially the proportion diagnosed in Australia of people living with a Hep B drifting up by maybe a percent a year top and leaving 70,000 people undiagnosed, the status quo is utterly unacceptable. So we need to do something to shift that. This might be one of those things. Other people might have better ideas. Bring them on. The essential point is that from a public health or health economic point of view, the US estimates are that screening is cost effective down to 0.3%. In the Netherlands, they estimate it's down to 0.4%. You know, the prevalence in Australia is 1%. It's significantly above the thresholds for similar health systems. The drugs are a lot cheaper for people who need to be treated with hepatitis B now. They're available on the PBS, so the cost of the individual is manageable and the cost of the government is plummeting now that they're off patent. I think it's cost effective. We know that Hep B is driving a significantly increasing burden of liver cancer, and that's just a disastrous outcome. And I guess from an advocacy point of view, we know that a range of communities, particularly culturally and linguistically diverse communities, and thinking obviously about Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people, do have lower degrees of health access in some regards. So if we can actually prioritise a condition that is disproportionately affecting them and actually put this on the radar as being something we really need to manage a whole lot better, then we'll be addressing some of those health outcome inequities in one way, at least for hepatitis B. And then we can shift the focus to not just trying to get people tested, but get them into care, get them treated, and prevent some of those cancers from happening.
Thanks, great. Ben.
Oh, look, thanks for the opportunity, Kate. Really
no
appreciate
worries.
It.
My thanks to my special guest today. Don't forget that all our podcasts are open access and available at www.mja.com.au/podcasts. Or you can subscribe to our feed at iTunes. My name's Kate Swanell, and we'll see you next time.